Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see a Jew.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
What? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See, the podcast, season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
To find out what's really going on behind the music, sometimes you have to dig deep. I'm Dr. Mike, and on the new season of Going There, we're doing just that.
Art or music can be your escape and your therapy.
Going There is the podcast at the crossroads of music and mental health, where we have raw, meaningful conversations with artists like Noah Kahn, Julian Baker, Jason Isbell, Youngblood, The Head and the Heart, and Bishop Briggs.
I recently heard someone describe grief as glitter, where you'll clean it up and then you'll find little pieces.
By opening ourselves up to these real discussions about mental health, we can foster understanding and gain even greater appreciation for the music we all love.
For me, like, my favorite songs give me happy tears.
So join me and some of your favorite artists on the new season of Going There with Dr. Mike, brought to you by Sound Mind Live and the Consequence Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out, it's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
Filmography is back, and just in time for Halloween season, we're taking a deep dive into the master of horror, John Carpenter. Starting September 27th, host Dominic Suzanne Mayer and a rotating panel of guests will break down each of Carpenter's 20 feature-length movies to date, with new episodes every Thursday. Grab your synthesizer, your flares, and your best Shatner mask, and come along on this latest journey with us.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's an audio interview series presented by WFPK Independent Louisville at WFPK.org, Consequence of Sound, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Take a second before we get started here to go ahead and hit the subscribe button wherever you're listening to. You might be checking it out on Spotify. You can follow along there. On YouTube, hit the subscribe button there or wherever you get your favorite podcast from. I'm Kyle Meredith, and today my guest is Mickey Dolenz from The Monkees. Following up the Good Times record that put them back on the charts after 50 years of being a band, they now have its follow-up called Christmas Party. It's the very first Christmas album from The Monkees, which is kind of crazy. Mickey and I are going to talk about that, as well as working with people like Andy Partridge of XTC, Rivers Cuomo from Weezer, Scott McCoy and Peter Buck from REM, how they've resurrected some of the late Davy Jones' vocals so he could be a part of this record, and what it's been like working with Adam Schlesinger. Then we'll turn back the clock 50 years to talk about an album that has become a cult fan favorite, that is Head, that just did celebrate its 50th anniversary, and its ties to Instant Replay, which will celebrate its 50th anniversary early next year. There's also a nice little teasing update about a ton of unreleased songs from the Monkees vaults. Very exciting. It's Kyle Meredith with Mickey Dolenz from the Monkees.
Hi, thanks for the call.
It's fun to say, here we are again with new album from the Monkees. This is happening a lot quicker these days. This is fun.
Yeah, no one's more surprised than me.
Yeah, I bet. So what we're talking about this time is Christmas Party. How is this the very first Christmas album in the Monkees' career? How did you all not get pressured into that the first time around?
That's a great question. I remember over the years, people bringing it up, talking about it. Why don't we do it? And we did a Christmas episode of the show, of course, once, mm-hmm. and sang a cappella version of an old Castilian kind of gothic folk song. And, you know, over the years, I recorded as a solo a couple of Christmas things for a compilation album. And I know David did. In fact, two of the songs that he recorded were remixed and also some additional, instrumentation on the new album. I guess it's just like nobody ever got around to it. But, you know, the Monkees show originally only lasted 2 or 3 years, and they were releasing a whole lot of albums during that very brief period of time. And then the show went off the air, as you probably know, and basically we stopped recording as a quartet, as the Monkees. Each of us went off and started doing our own kind of thing. And there was nobody driving the train, no pun intended, really, for years. The first reunion, 86, when three of us got back together and released a couple of new songs. That was then, This Is Now. And so and that's basically the short story. Nobody just ever got around to it, I think. This is the short answer. But here we are with, I think, I'm very proud of it. I'm very proud of the CD. I love it.
And it does come really quick on the heels, comparatively anyway, of Good Times.
Right. And so that was another part of the issue. After the success of Good Times, and, you know, considering a 50-year-old act, that album did really, really well, all things considered. And, of course, the first... You know, as soon as that happened, the record company immediately started talking about following it up, of course, which is what you usually do. Uh-huh. But I can only speak for myself, not, of course, Peter or Mike or the record company. I was a little hesitant. I mean, it had taken quite a lot of work to pull that album together, and we got real lucky finding, you know, original tracks from the 60s and Davey's voice on stuff. And then, of course, the title track, my friend Harry Nilsson, that demo that he, well, it wasn't a demo, it was more than a demo, but with his lead vocal as the scratch vocal, and I did the duet with him. And I thought, you know, boy, this is going to be real tough to follow this, you know, with those incredible songs by Rivers Cuomo and Ben Gibbard and Alan Partridge. And how are you going to follow that, you know, especially if you're going to try to do it really quickly and call it Good Times 2, you know, right, whatever. And I just asked, I said, how the heck are we going to try to pull all that together, you know, that very quickly? And then Rhino came up with the idea of, how about a Christmas album? You've never done one. And it isn't like then you're doing Good Times 2. It's a totally different kettle of fish. And I loved the idea. I thought that this perfect Christmas holiday album. We knew we had these tracks of David from the 70s, I think he recorded them. Then we got submissions from Rivers Cuomo and from Alan Partridge and others. And then Nez climbed on board and said, I'll do a couple. And Peter came on board, said he'll do some. And it came together fast, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, you've kind of got your dream team there now with Partridge and Rivers and Scott and Peter and everything. I mean, it's like, you know, how much...
No kidding.
Yeah. How much involvement do you have in the originals when they're working on them, or is it they just kind of submit and you sign off? How does that work?
Well, the kind of the same way it always worked. You know, the record company puts the word out. In the case of Good Times, that's exactly what happened. We knew we had these unfinished tracks and vocals from the 60s. We've always known that. We had recorded so much material over the months and years because they wanted, you know, a couple of songs in every episode, every new episode, every week. So we were recording just day and night, especially me, because I did most of the lead singing. And I would go in the studio after having already worked 8 to 10 hours on the television show on the set. And it was not uncommon for me then to go down to RCA Victor studios on Sunset and record until midnight, sometimes 2 lead vocals a night.
Wow.
But the process was, it's fairly well known. The writers were part of the Brill Building, the Screen Gems mm-hmm. publishing music. And that's not a coincidence, I'm sure. And so the publishers, the head of the publishing in New York, Don Kirshner, of course, and then out here in L.A., it was Lester Sill. They had, you know, given these writers their marching orders. You know, when the series sold, they said, okay, Neil Diamond, Carole King, Jerry Goffin, Diane Hildebrand, Carol Bayer Sager, David Gates, all these people that were sitting in these little cubby holes. And that's how it worked back then. That's how the songwriting worked. That, you know, the Shirelles would say, we need a new song, and Carole King would submit them. You know, that, and so the same thing happened with the Monkees. And so back then, I would hear the early demos, acetate demos of just, say, you know, Carole King singing Pleasant Valley Sunday or whatever, just playing the piano. And I would say, wow, I like that one, but it's in the wrong key. Or and sometimes I would hear something and it didn't really grab me, you know, and I'd say, well, you know, I'm not sure about that one. So, and then eventually, of course, we would start writing stuff too, especially Mike. And so the same kind of thing happened with Good Times. I sat down one night, I know, with Andrew Sandoval, and he's the one that had salvaged and archived all these stuff from the 60s. We sat down for a couple hours and listened and picked a few that we both thought would work, like good times, mm-hmm. Harry Nilsson one, for instance. And in fact, that I was the one that suggested the name of the album be Good Times. I thought that'd be a great title track. And then some others. Then hearing a couple of things that Davey had sung on, which is very cool. And so it came, and then Rhino Records, John Hughes specifically over there, kind of the A&R, that hardly doesn't exist anymore, does it, A&R? He reached out to some people he knew, and we'd known over the years that some of these writers were fans, but he reached out and spread the word, and all of a sudden, I mean, we just got inundated with material from these people, Noel Gallagher and Paul Weller, and oh my God, we can't wait to write a song for the Monkees. And we had a plethora of material that we could choose from, and that's how Good Times came about. You know, it was just like, you know, it was like the perfect storm kind of thing.
Well, I'm such a big fan of a lot of those songwriters, and you know, the Peter Buck and Scott McCoy probably, you know, is top tier writers for me, and that title track to this Christmas Party is so good. You know,
isn't that great?
It has a different feeling to the rest of it too. Wouldn't you say there is a bit more? I don't know. I guess the way it drives.
There's so many I like on the CD. I mean. And the traditional stuff too. I mean, mm-hmm. Snowfall. I love Nez on Snowfall because it reminds me of my mom singing that back in the 40s and 50s when I was a kid. She would sing that song around Christmas time. I love Gingerbread. I love the first single as "Unwrap You for Christmas." I like "What Would Santa Do." And so many of them there, you know, and it's nice because they're pretty generic in the sense that they're not heavily weighted on any major religious theme. it's just good time kind of party music.
You'd mentioned Davey a few times, you know, being featured on here, going back and finding those, you know, those old tracks. I mean, that's got to still be a special moment. I mean, it's such a cool way, in one sense, to keep the band together, I guess.
I suppose that's one way to put it. But you got to remember, the Monkees was not a band. It was a TV show.
Yeah, yeah.
About a band. And that's certainly the way I've always looked at it. And so if you look at the four of us more like the cast of a musical, you know, for my money, the whole thing makes a whole lot more sense. Because like I mentioned before, after the show went off the air, there was no Monkees. There was no Monkee office or Monkee management or Monkee business like you know, equivalent of, say, Apple or Stones management or anything like that. It was nothing. You know, the show went off the air. They shut the offices, closed the doors, and that was it. like any television series, I suppose.
Yeah. Was there any talk to include Christmas Is My Time of Year with this collection, just to wrap it all up? That was kind of the one, you know, floating Christmas track out there that was associated with the Monkees that had been recorded.
Yes, there was talk, and you know, the A&R people and the record company and us to some degree, and Adam Schlesinger especially, mm-hmm. who I think did an incredible job in an amazingly short period of time. For my money, I mean, I, and again, I can only speak for myself. I tend to leave that stuff up to the powers that be. You know, that's their job to make those kind of decisions. There's an old English saying, you don't keep a dog and bark yourself. and I kind of operate like that in my life in general in business. I surround myself with people that I trust and that I you know, believe in, and then I let them do their job. And in the case of this, I've certainly put in my two cents about the songs and the material that I responded to. But basically, I leave that kind of stuff up to the producers. And like you, or if I'm acting in a film, I leave it up to the director, if you know what I mean.
Right, right. Well, again, I'm a really big fan of Christmas Party. It's been a lot of fun hearing the new music. And if you don't mind, while we've still got a couple minutes here, to head back, because we're sort of riding the line between two anniversaries, two Monkees album anniversaries, too. You all have been talking about Head a little bit lately, that just turned 50, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We just had a big screening here in Los Angeles at the Egyptian Theater. We had a packed, sold-out screening, and then Michael Nesmith and I did a Q&A about it after, and then had a big meet and greet. It's become quite this little cult thing.
Well, it's such a cool album. I mean, and of course, it sounds quite a bit different when you place it, you know, against the other albums of the catalog, and that's sort of what I wondered, like, looking back on that, how much of the direction of that was desire and vision versus how much was maybe being swept up in the times and the trends?
So that turns into quite a long story. But it starts with us being introduced to this guy named Jack Nicholson. And he was a friend of Bob Rafelson, the producer of the Monkees and one who actually created the show. And the idea at the time was, guys, we have an opportunity to make a movie, a kind of low-budget movie, but Columbia Pictures, the parent company of Screen Gems, produced the series, said that let's make a movie, and we have an opportunity to do something different than the TV show. On the television show, of course, it's standards and practices and the censors and this, and there was never any, you know, opportunity to kind of stretch out and do something with more, I don't know, adult themes or anything like that. They said, yeah, we could do something different. And I remember agreeing that we did not want to do just a 90-minute version of the television show. We probably should have. It would have probably been a lot more successful. But then again, we wouldn't have this wonderful, quirky, a little cult movie. But The thing I was going to just say briefly is that you got to remember that the people that behind it, Jack Nicholson, unknown at the time, of course, Bert Schneider, Bob Rapelson became the huge director. They were part of that young buck movement in Hollywood with Peter Fonda, Dennis Hopper, Bob and Bert, the Monkees producers, are the ones that made Easy Rider. And other people like Martin Scorsese, and they were bucking up against the major Hollywood studio system at the time, which still existed. And it was virtually impossible to get a film made or distributed unless you were part of that Hollywood studio system. And long story short, Bob, Bert, Jack, Peter Fonda, Dennis Hopper, Martin Scorsese, and others, they broke down the wall. They broke that fourth wall and essentially created the independent Hollywood film industry. And Head, that movie, was one of the first to do that. I don't know if you ever saw the movie, but it's definitely about deconstruction.
Right.
Not just deconstructing the Monkees, per se, but also deconstructing that old traditional Hollywood studio system. And so that was also reflected in the music, which is the long answer to your question.
Well, you know, what I've always been amazed at when I look back on that time is the speed of change that bands could do musically. You know, I was just talking with Roger McGuinn and separately with David Crosby, and the way the Byrds had shifted from psychedelic to country in 4 months. You know, it was sort of like that, because the Monkees went from Head to Instant Replay, which, you know, was in just a matter of months, too, as far as release dates go. And to me, the style change in that, you know, bands have trouble replicating that these days over a 2-year period, let alone a mere months. You know, it's amazing.
Well, again, that's remember, the Monkees was not your traditional sort of band. All that, the songs on Instant Replay, that they'd already been recorded way before we did the movie Head. This was part of the massive amount, and there's still 60 tracks and vocals out there that have never been released and never finished, because they needed all this material so fast for the television show. Over the period of those couple of years, you know, we were recording 24/7. And so Instant Replay, I don't recall the track list, you know, letter for letter, but Instant Replay was a lot of stuff that had already been recorded and they had planned to release and you know, and put on the television show. But the television show was canceled and we all went on our merry way. So it's not like after the movie Head, we all sat down and said, oh, now let's do Instant Replay. It didn't work like that.
Yeah.
That was under the auspices of the record company. Some good songs on that album too, though.
Oh, great songs! Yeah, all throughout. In fact, you know, Shorty Blackwell, that your little opus there, that's turning 50 next year. So that's.
Oh my God, that's so funny! Yeah, keep getting asked to do that. I don't know how I could ever do that on stage, but it is. Yeah, I know. That's a quirky little thing.
So 60 tracks and you know, vocals. I mean, is there any kind of desire to keep getting that stuff out in some way?
Well, we talked about it. Like I said, we talked about it originally after Good Times. And it certainly wouldn't happen for at least a year or two, if at all. You know, I mean, I don't know how you're going to follow up that Good Times album. It's just so special to me.
It's good stuff that you're still doing. I mean, 50 some odd years later, you know, it's still quality albums. So yeah, it's amazing.
You know, the equivalent, it occurred to me, the equivalent would having you know, a top 20 album 50 years after the fact. I can't think of any other act that's done that. You know, you'd probably know more about than I. But having a top 20 album like that 50 years after the fact. And not a compilation album either,
right,
obviously,
right.
It would be the equivalent of in 1967, 50 years ago from when we released Good Times, in 1967, it would be the equivalent of having an act having a top 20 album from the year 1917, just at the end of the First World War.
Wow.
Like Enrico Caruso.
Right,
having
right.
A top 20 album.
Oh, man. Well, congratulations on that, on Good Times and on Christmas Party, too. It really is a fun record, and we just so much enjoy hearing what you guys continue to do. We really do.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Mickey, it was a pleasure
talking to you.
We'll see you around.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And a big old thanks to Mickey Dolenz from the Monkees. Again, the new Christmas record is called Christmas Party. It is out now. If you haven't already, hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening to, whether it's on YouTube, on Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts from. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show every Monday through Thursday from noon to 3 Eastern, where you can also find some bonus episodes of this series. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.